Hi, Sue Hall here, and welcome to the 11th podcast in our fourth series of Talking the Dis Out of Dyslexia, hosted by the Whole Dyslexic Society. On March 27th, 2021, TEDx Bear Creek Park live-streamed 12 talks, and I was privileged to be one of the speakers. Today, my very own one-on-one TEDx coach is here. So welcome, Wendy LaRue.
Thank you so much, Sue. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's a privilege. And this is like old time, 7 o'clock on a Wednesday evening. But this time I don't have to read my script to you.
Much more relaxed than that, yes.
There you go. Now, we never get a chance to learn very much about our coaches, so I'm going to take full advantage of this opportunity. All I know is that you belong to Toastmasters. So tell us how that came about, if you would.
Well, you know, I've been a Toastmaster now for 11 years, if you can believe it. And I started out because, I don't know if most women feel this way, but I certainly felt this way. 11 years ago, I felt like I was, I liken it to driving a car, the car of my life. And I was in the driver's seat, but I was not actually driving. It was my kids, my husband, my job, everything besides me. But I needed to figure out a way that I could get what was in my heart and in my head out of my mouth. And I heard about Toastmasters, had heard about it for a number of years, and thought, maybe that might help me verbalize what I didn't have the courage or the understanding to say. And it opened so many doors, including the door to you.
Well, I'm not sure about that door. But that's very interesting. It's almost like you could have gone to therapy. I mean, I don't mean that in a rude way. Do you know what I mean? But Toastmasters, to me, if anybody had said go to Toastmasters, I think, no, I can't do public speaking.
But it's not just about public speaking, too. It's about gaining the courage to actually speak what you know to be true about yourself. Because I think that I shouldn't lump everybody into it. But myself, I was just letting everything slide. And I was looking after everyone else instead of myself. Yeah. And I didn't even know that I could have a voice. And I had to find my voice before it was too late. And then my mom passed away. And I thought, if I don't do it now, when will it happen? 95 and still not getting what I really need.
That's so fantastic and very brave. So did it live up to your expectations?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I would say within a few weeks, I was feeling a bit more courageous. And then within a year, I was able to ask for a raise. I was able to just not take things that I had been taking before, speaking my mind, which I had a real hard time doing. Because I don't want to hurt anybody. I'm very kind all the time.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who have a great deal of difficulty speaking their mind.
I do too. I think it's rampant.
Well, you don't want to hurt people. You don't want to look as if you're making a fuss very often, you know?
Yes, or taking too much charge or just being boss. There's just so many sides to it.
Yeah.
But it's a funny thing. The more you take care of yourself, the more you can take care of others.
The whole pulling the mask down over yourself before the child, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, good for you. What do you think you found the most enjoyable looking back on those 11 years?
The biggest and best thing that happened was just the communication with people, because you meet people like yourself. I have coached now for, I think, 6 years with the TEDx, with Bear Creek, with Abbotsford and White Rock, and I so enjoy it. So those have been the best moments where I'm able to coach or mentor people to understand that speaking can change their lives. It's not just about learning to speak in public. It's about getting that raise, getting that job you would like. It's about just going after the things you want, having the courage, and then having the words to follow that courage and speak up for yourself and get the things that you really would like to have.
And put it in a format that you know is going to be successful, or at least it has a very good chance of being successful.
That's right. Received well and formulated well. Your words are formulated well, so you know that you have to come prepared, and you do come prepared because you've learned how to do it.
Fantastic. When you go to a meeting and you have to give a talk, do they always tell you what you're going to have to talk about?
No, it's totally up to you. We choose a path. There's pathways. There are 11 different ones. I'm in one called Leadership Development.
Oh.
And so there's different levels, and you decide the pace for yourself. And there are lots of people that will help you, give you a little nudge, get you going in the right direction if you're starting to slow down, because we all are very excited about when we start. But then it starts to get a little harder, and you need to dig a little deeper, and then it's, oh, I'm busy. Really, we really try to, I say push, but we try to pull people forward and help them get what they really came for. Just like with you, you knew what you wanted to say. You knew what you wanted to get across to people. And we didn't push you. We pulled you, pulled all that information from you in a really good way, because it was always there. But let's find a way to get it to the surface and be understood and accepted and changing lives.
Oh, that was so much fun. Now, your other one-on-one was Di Manuel. I didn't know that till halfway through.
Oh, really?
No. And I love Di's talk, but it sort of seems that we're quite different. He is so outgoing, isn't he? And so full of energy. And I'm so British.
You two were the exact opposite ends of the scale. Mm. But you both had a tremendous amount of heart that it takes to be a great TEDx speaker, I think. And with you, I was trying to find that crazy person, or the one that we loved, the person you are when you're with your friends and when you're excited. So we found that. And with Di, we were looking for places where he could be really vulnerable, because he is. But because he's so exuberant, that sometimes was not what you thought when you met him.
And his talk was all about vulnerability. And he really does walk his talk.
He really does. Yeah, he lives it and breathes it and everything else. You would never know what his talk was about if you met him, because he's so outgoing and so vivacious.
You had to use different techniques on us.
Yes, even the conversations that you and I had were different from what Di and I had. You were very quiet and laid back and reserved, and Di was on the other end. You know, I couldn't have done the coaching on the same night, because there was such a different energy. I had to be ready for you, and I had to be ready for Di.
Yes. Dial up for me and dial down for Di.
Exactly.
Now, Noel shared with me that the Toastmasters have a technique for giving feedback, and he shared that it was the Toastmaster sandwich. So you give something positive, and then you make your suggestion, and then you give something positive again.
That's right. It works very well. There's a lot of different methods, actually, but the point of it is, the whole basis of learning to speak is finding out what you do really, really well and finding out what you could improve upon. And so we call them evaluations, and whether you do it like a sandwich or as a glove technique, I'm not even sure what that is, but there's lots of different ways. But it's to ensure that the person who spoke, first of all, wants to speak again. Yeah. Doesn't get crushed, but understands what they do really well, because you want to foster that. You have some real gifts speaking, and you want to really pull those. But if there's some things that really stand out that are jarring, or that just won't translate, that's what we want to try and just find a way to make those less obvious, or just get rid of them altogether. And so that's what an evaluation is. It's basically constructive feedback. And it's just meant so that you don't go on and on and on making the same mistake over and over again. But you look and think, oh my gosh, I do that. That's terrible. I want that out. And then you do it because someone has pointed it out to you.
Yeah. And I mean, to be honest, there were times when I thought, I am not changing another thing. I'm sure everybody feels like that, right? You've written the script, you've had to rehash the script, you've started the memorization, and then you have to put all the different sort of emphasis on different things. And there are times I thought, oh no, I am just not changing another thing. Could you feel that sometimes?
Oh, you know what? I felt it with every speaker, because it's like you're having a baby. This is your baby.
Yes. And the contractions have just started.
Yes. But that baby will never get into the world unless you find that real core message, and you managed to find it. And there was lots of changes. And with dyes, there was lots of changes as well. But what came out was a rough diamond. And what everybody got after all these months was this beautiful, shiny, polished diamond, but still the essential message that you came with in the first place.
You've been part of the TEDx selection team as well?
No. I am a coach and have never been part of a selection team. Although all of us, when you go out and look for people, and when they bring people in, they've narrowed it all down from, you know, how many, 60, 70, 80 people to the 15 or 16. So at that point, the coaches do get involved, and we get to hear the rough speeches from the people that have been cut down to that smaller amount. And then I can give feedback at that point. also when you kind of connect sometimes with the speakers, when I heard their auditions, I completely connected with you and I completely connected with Di. But of course, I can't say that because am I going to get these two? No, I have to keep a really open mind. So when I got your name and Di, I was just
like, oh, that worked out perfectly for all of us, I'm sure.
I know, because for two reasons. I have a son who definitely has ADD, and whenever you were talking, I could just put myself in your position. I could see my son, and I just resonated with me. I thought so many people are going to feel the same way. And Di's, because I have two sons, that's where I resonated with him as well. So it was pretty incredible. And I don't know if they do it on purpose or if it's just fate, but for me, this was the perfect match, the two perfect matches this year.
Wonderful. Yeah. I just thought you had the short straw.
Oh, that's funny.
I remember I was going to ask about stories because we were talking about the script and how it was shaped. And my script changed completely from the beginning. And I was encouraged to bring in far more stories. And I had no idea before I started that when you tell a story, apparently the person who's listening, the whole of their brain lights up. And when you just say information, only a little bit of it lights up. But the comments that I've been getting about the stories, it's totally playing out like that.
Yeah. And doesn't it sort of change how you operate too during the day? Because even people that you're seeing every day and might have difficulties, you've got stories. It's plus there's the information, of course, but there's the stories that you tell that they will completely resonate with and choose you because you understand them, because you've been there before, because you have all these experiences and stories. And to me, a story is the best way to connect. I listen with my heart, not with my head. And when you and I talked about it, when you were doing, you know, numbers and percentages, and it was finished, and I thought, oh, what did you just say?
Yeah.
And when you told the story, oh, that I understand. I get that.
Yeah. It was just a very big learning curve. Actually, one thing I do remember, you calling me the gentle warrior. Do you remember that? That was quite funny because I've just done an interview with Tom Dutter, who is the quiet warrior.
Maybe that's where it came from. No, you know what? It's just that you were gentle. You were so gentle, but you were never going to let go of someone that you knew you could help. And I thought that was from the beginning of your speech to the end of your speech. You were not going to leave anybody behind.
Well, that's very sweet. And talking about connecting to people, what came into my head was at the interview assessment, when the child comes in with their parent, we're talking about how they think and how they learn. And there's always a moment where the child looks at me and sort of gives me a funny look and thinks, she's inside my head. She knows how I think. And that's the moment when you know that they're going to be willing to do the program.
That's amazing.
It's really fun to watch. Honestly, they almost sort of put their head to one side and they give you a funny look like nobody's ever told me how I think.
Yes. And right. You know what? You and I had the exact opposite experience in my reckoning. You were talking about the elephant and how you see it in 3D. And when you told that story the first time, I was completely blown away because I do not see things that way. And I think it took probably 3 or 4 times of you saying it when it soaked in. I thought, that's so different from how I think. So I think probably more norm, but you, these kids walk in and they must just be so relieved.
And they're way better at it than I am. Yeah. Way better. Their perception is amazing. And their imagination, it's like an IMAX theater going on inside their heads.
So do you think that there's, because they are allowed to be who they are, they're more so now than when you were growing up? Like, does yours not develop as much? Or is it just the kids are just wired differently now?
I think there's a lot to be said for that, actually. I think they are wired differently. I think there's a lot of 3-year-olds that come into the world with a remote in their hand, right? Mm. And they know how the TV works and all this technology. It's just sort of part of them. So I think there is a difference in that. At the same time, I think that when I went to school, like I said in the talk, dyslexia really wasn't a thing. And they certainly had no idea that we could alter our perception. The gentleman who wrote The Gift of Dyslexia was the one who brought about this understanding of altering perception. And that book came out in 1987. So it's a fairly recent discovery. I think there was another gentleman, Thomas West. He wrote a book called In the Mind's Eye. And I think that came out a little earlier, but there wasn't that big connection between what he discovered and how we could actually put a program together to help kids who have that way of thinking.
That's fascinating. A long time ago.
It was a while ago, but it's very difficult to substantiate, if you like, because nobody yet has discovered how to photograph where my mind's eye is. It's very, very real for the people who have this ability, and it's very, very flaky for those who don't.
Yeah, I think that's where your talk was so important, because you were able to reach me. Maybe because I have the connection with my son being ADHD, and I know they have no connection, but I saw that struggling person, he just didn't learn the way everybody else learned. And they used to say to me, what we want to find out is if he can't learn or he won't learn.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that the first time, I thought, well, that's huge to me. So is it just something he doesn't want to do, or he can't do it? And mm-hmm. to establish the fact eventually that really he was having difficulty doing it. It wasn't that he didn't want to,
mm-hmm.
but he became so poor at it that he didn't want to. But it wasn't that he couldn't ever learn. He has a brilliant mind. It's just not set up the same way as mine is, or 90% of people.
Yeah, I think every child enters this world being curious, don't they? The little ones, it's just why, and how does, you know, it's a natural thing to be curious. And unfortunately, sometimes we manage to turn off that curiosity for them. That's very sad.
Yeah, I remember being so uptight about him. My fear was that he was funny and just so unique. But my fear was that he's cute and unique at 4 and 3. What happens when he's 9 and 10? This, all these interesting habits and traits won't be so cute at 10. So I was so careful to allow him to be himself, but I was also trying to get him into a little box that he just didn't necessarily fit in, which is exactly what anybody with dyslexia is experiencing.
And I think there is a connection. We're told that we think in 32 images a second. Now, you and I are probably talking at about 3 or 4 words a second. So the sound thinkers can cope with that speed, whereas the picture thinkers, they've got 32 images dashing through their head in 1 second. I mean, that's the subliminal speed. The film at the movie theater comes through at 24, 25 frames a second. So sometimes I think that children who have those labels of ADD and ADHD, they're basically just very, very fast thinkers. And because they're thinking so fast, they're often missing what's going on in front of them. Because they're wrapped up in their wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's so interesting, because I know he used to say, so what are you doing? He said, well, I can hear the guy out in the hallway. So he couldn't hear the teacher, but he could hear the toilet flushing down the hallway. Yeah, I remember being described once as, when you see a child with ADHD or learning difficulties, you know, you look at your hand and you see 5 fingers. They look at your hand and they see the spaces between.
Yes.
There's so many things we just don't know.
I know. And that was the point, wasn't it? And nobody asks us.
Yeah.
Nobody says, how do you think and how do you learn? And obviously, we always assume that we think and learn like everybody else, because nobody brings that subject up. It's not exactly a dinner party conversation, is it?
Yes. And we all assume that everybody is the same as we are.
Yeah, totally. Why wouldn't we? Yeah. Oh, there we are. We're going over the speech again, aren't we?
That's right. I love it.
Wendy, what do you do besides being a Toastmaster? You have other hobbies?
Well, as you know, I'm a big gardener, but now I've moved into a condo, a sweet little funky condo. So I love to walk. I love to kayak.
Oh,
yeah. I'm a kayaker. I love to bake.
Beautiful.
And I work as a customer happiness manager for a mail order plant business here in Langley. And so that keeps me really busy.
I can believe that. Definitely. So if you wanted to give a TEDx talk, what do you suppose you might give your talk on? Have you ever thought about that?
I have, and there's 2 things. Okay,
ooh.
First, kindness. I'm a huge proponent of kindness. You know, when my boys would go out to someone's house and I would be ushering them out the door, I'd say, be kind. Because that's, to me, the weight of the world rests in our kindness. And if I could do a talk about kindness and find another way to reach people, that would be it. And always the bridesmaid, never a bride. Now, that goes back to my Toastmasters. And what I mean by that is there's so many people, and I specifically think of women, we take a back seat, we acquiesce, or we push others forward, and always the bridesmaid, never the bride. And I watched this over the years, and I just think there's a speech in there somewhere to encourage people to step up and be the bride. Not a real bride, but.
I haven't actually heard anybody give a speech in those terms, have you?
No, I haven't. And I've seen some people touch on it, to be who you are, for gosh sake, get out there, put the fabulous clothes on. Gillian Dunn did a speech, change your closet, change your life. And parts of that would remind me of this topic. We just put away the good jewelry. We don't wear the fancy dress. Like, what are we waiting for?
That's a very good point. It's got to come from our ancestry. I mean, we're programmed to be the number two, aren't we?
Yes. Well, my mom, she collected beautiful china with lovely pictures on it. Did she ever use them? She never did. And she said, what is wrong with me? And so she started to take them out and chip them, and she loved it. But for most of her life, she just never used them.
That's a very interesting one. I think you should do it, Wendy.
Someday. Maybe you'll be my coach.
That would be hilarious. What would you like to leave the listeners with? Some pearls of Wendy's wisdom?
Every one of us has a mentor or a coach, and we've had them since the day we were born, our parents, our teachers, and just people that come in and out of our lives. And if you can do one thing for the world, turn around and give what you have, your knowledge, and share it with someone else. Share it with a young person or someone older. Be a coach and a mentor to someone else today, tomorrow, the next day, always.
I think I've got a title for your talk, The Kind Coach.
As opposed to the evil coach.
No, you were a very kind coach. It's not easy. I get it from this end, because you don't want to be upset by your coach. Not that you'd ever set out to, but it's easy to say something to someone that you don't know very well and touch something that you didn't know was there.
Yes. It's important not to do that. And I recall a couple of times when you and I were going back and forth, and I could see that you had cut, you cut, and you needed to hang on to certain things. And that was really important. So we just had to leave those alone and kind of go around them until you were ready to either change them a little bit, turn them into a story. I think that's all a part of coaching and mentoring, is to let the person come to that conclusion themselves. And that's hard to do when you can see in your mind's eye that better if you could, but we have to get there ourselves.
She's digging her heels in.
Well, you don't dig, but I could see that there was times when the baby was being turned into something you weren't quite ready for, but you were very open.
It all turned out for the best.
It sure did.
And thanks to you, the comments are very kind. And I think for me, the comments that I was looking forward to most in terms of hoping they were good were from my fellow facilitators, because there's 400 of us around the world. And I knew perfectly well that I was the only person who's done this. And so the first breath of what we do going out into the world needed to be something that the others were happy with. And I was very grateful that they were happy.
So, oh, that's great. So you've had good feedback.
Mm-hmm. And it's so exciting every day to go to YouTube and see how many views you have. Thanks to all of you, and especially to you. Thank you, Wendy.
It was such a treat to be your coach. It really was. It was nice getting to know you, and it'll keep on going, which I really love.
Definitely, yes. And we will meet in person one of these days. We don't have any way of people getting hold of you. Which Toastmaster is your home ground,
so
to speak?
Langley 2743.
Wonderful. So if anybody's out there and would like to get to know Wendy a little more, to have some of her wisdom or her coaching, you could always find her through Langley Toastmasters, which is Langley 2743. And I'm sure she would love to meet you, and you would love to meet her, that's for sure.
Thank you very much. That's amazing.
Thank you, Wendy. So thank you to everyone who's listening. Please subscribe, follow, share. And if you'd like to see what the whole Dyslexic Society is up to, go to www.thewds.org. And we'd love to hear from you at info@thewds.org. I hope you'll join us to hear some more speakers and more of the TEDx Bear Creek Park organizing and coaching team. Until next time, take care, stay well, and bye for now.